we inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you with us today on the program. I'm Walker Wildman, and the show is hosted by Rick Green and myself each week here on American Family Radio. AFR.net is our URL. You can catch the live stream, the live audio, that is, over at AFR.net. If you want to download the AFR app, it's free, no gimmicks, no tricks, and you can access not only live radio content from American Family Radio, but you can also listen to past shows, otherwise known as podcast. So we upload the show each afternoon in the form of a podcast on the AFR app and on all major podcast platforms. So there's a litany of options for you as far as listening to the program. And maybe you miss a segment or miss an interview and you want to go back and listen. That's perfectly fine. We like that. So feel free to subscribe to the podcast as well. But all things American Family Radio and At the Core can be found at AFR.net. Turning our attention to the scriptures as we do each day, Psalm 146 is where we are today. How blessed, this is verse 5, how blessed is he whose help is the God of Jacob, whose hope is in the Lord his God, who made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them, who keeps faith forever, talking about the Lord's faithfulness. Verse 7, who executes justice for the oppressed, who gives food to the hungry. The Lord sets the prisoners free. Verse 8, the Lord opens the eyes of the blind. The Lord raises up those who are bowed down. The Lord loves the righteous. The Lord protects the strangers. He supports the fatherless and the widow. But he thwarts the way of the wicked. That's verse 9. And so this is just a glimpse into Psalm 146. There's a lot to pack in here to our few first minutes. But God is a God of justice. That's a fact. God is a God of justice, of godly justice, of pure justice, of biblical justice. Also, the Lord is pleased when the downtrodden are helped, when the oppressed are set free. And this is not only applicable in a spiritual sense, in a spiritual setting, right? Meaning the heart being set free, man being set free from sin, which is what happens through Jesus and the Holy Spirit. But also God rejoices, the Lord rejoices, heaven rejoices when the oppressed are set free physically here on this earth. And we can talk about all kinds of examples of that, but biblical justice is very much a thing, and God uses his people, and he uses earthly authorities to fulfill that justice and that liberation. And we'll talk more about what that looks like through some of the stories today, but that's Psalm 146, just a few verses there. I want to thank our listening audience. You guys knocked it out of the park the last 2 weeks, and our goal was 4,500 ultrasounds through preborn, and we got 5,825 as of this morning. I'm sure that number's gone up a little bit since we pulled those totals, but thanks to everyone who participated in our preborn campaign. Once again, our goal was 4,500. We attempted to do that in a week. A little bit aggressive there, but we carried that campaign on into a couple of days last week and reached 5,825 ultrasounds. Bobby, this is the beautiful thing about this total, Bobby, is it's not just dollars, right? Dollars and cents. With this specific campaign and this goal, these are babies that are going to be saved.
Yeah, exactly. And this is going to be exponentially multiplied. because people will find out about this. They'll find out about similar sponsorships, ministries, and so forth, and it'll become very commonplace, very, very much in the household name type of situation.
Amen. Amen. So that's Preborn. We've been partnering with them for over a decade. And folks, if you want to run the math on how many babies are going to be saved here, statistically speaking, we're looking at, if there's 5,800 ultrasounds going to be provided through the partnership with AFR, then you're talking about 4,000 to 4,500 babies that are, and that's on the conservative side, that are going to be saved from the demonic act of abortion. So we are directly, through you guys, our listening audience and Preborn, we are directly saving the lives of babies, not to mention the fact that we're sharing the gospel with all the moms and the dads that come in. So the impact here is just hard to describe. So thanks to everyone who called in, went online, and donated to Preborn. A couple other things, at least one other thing for this segment, that I want to point out is our Culture Warrior documentary. This has been out for a couple months now, and it's a film about the early days of the ministry and about my grandfather, Don Wildman, and how God used him. But it's even more than that. It's a lot of really American history, really looking into the 60s, 70s, and 80s, even some past that, and how God raised up leaders in our country. God raised up believers in our country to be a force for good and against evil. And so that's the Culture Warrior story, culturewarrior.movie. You can check that out, culturewarrior.movie. Well, jumping into some of the stories when we have a few minutes left this segment, mass deportations have begun, folks. I'm proud to announce the mass deportations have begun. Immigration and Customs Enforcement announced yesterday they arrested over 900 illegal aliens in one day, which is a near record, at least in recent years. 900 illegal immigrants, illegal aliens arrested in one day and deported by Immigration and Customs Enforcement. President Trump has authorized all federal law enforcement agencies, including the ATF, DEA, and FBI, to be deployed for deportation purposes. And one example of this is in outside of Denver, in Colorado, the DEA conducted a mass raid. Over 100 law enforcement agencies, or agents rather, conducted a raid and deported about 49 illegal immigrants in one day just in the Denver area. Most of these were gang members, Venezuelan gang members that were busted in the Denver area. So that was the DEA. They were putting that out. So this wasn't even ICE. I'm sure ICE was embedded with them, but it just shows that President Trump's using every resource at his disposal. Tom Holman, border czar, said he wants these numbers to go up. You know, 900 a day is not good enough. We need to go up to 1,500 a day and sustain that deportation level in order to really begin to fix what's going on in our country. Well, you know, the media is wasting no time trying to misrepresent and spin what's going on with the deportations and trying to claim that ICE is raiding schools, which is not happening at all. They actually lied about a story. I think it was in maybe Illinois or Chicago, claiming that ICE showed up at a school, and that actually wasn't even the case. It was another federal agency, and it had nothing to do with illegal immigration. But nonetheless, let's listen to Stephen Miller, the Honorable Stephen Miller, talking about the reality that if the feds show up, it's to protect the kids, protect the families, protect Americans. Clip one.
There's a report from Chicago that there are ICE agents that were turned away from a Southside elementary school earlier today. Is targeting of schools, targeting of things like this, something that the administration is comfortable with and will continue with?
I think the framing of the question is wrong. If there's a law enforcement activity that's taking place in a school, then that would be for the protection and defense of a child. As you know, there's a epidemic of child trafficking and labor trafficking in this country. When federal law enforcement officers are turned away from a school, it is the act of turning them away that endangers the lives and safety of children. We've seen, as you know, 500,000 children trafficked over a four-year period in the United States. This administration is going to investigate every instance of child trafficking, labor trafficking, sex trafficking, child smuggling, and all the attendant crimes involved in that. And our message to everyone in the country is to cooperate fully with Immigration and Customs Enforcement so that we can end the scourge of child trafficking and child abuse that has been endemic these last 4 years.
To Stephen's point, he says, look, the phrasing of the question is totally twisted. It's totally biased. And the story was literally fake, okay? This woke Chicago school decided they would put out a statement claiming that they turned away ICE agents at the front door. No, that didn't even happen. It literally wasn't a thing. They make stuff up. I'm telling you, they make stuff up. And they make it up out of thin air. It was actually Secret Service personnel investigating, quote, a threat to one of their protectees. So there were actually students in the Chicago school that were potentially engaged in criminal activity. So it's the opposite. It wasn't the ICE agents that weren't even there. It was the Secret Service agents investigating a potential crime that occurred from a student within the school. But they ran the headline, ICE agents rejected at school door. No, that didn't even happen. There's nothing about that that's true. But that's the headline they want. But President Trump is moving at such breakneck speed that the left can't even keep up. Is scandalize a word? I love making up words. I think scandalize probably is a word. But even if it's not, they can't even scandalize anything President Trump's doing because he's doing so much so fast. It's drinking from a fire hose. Remember during the first term, they ran the kids in cages story, which wasn't even a thing. And they literally made it up. But President Trump's locking kids up in cages. Well, number one, that wasn't even a thing. Never happened. But also, they like honed in on it for weeks. Like that was all they talked about on the media. But President Trump's doing so much, they can't even focus on anything. They are just like, their heads are spinning. Their necks are sore. They just can't keep up. They can't type out the stories fast enough. Because as soon as they're typing up one story, not only does it get debunked, but then they're moving on to another story. So it's a quite beautiful thing. Colombia yesterday, they decided over the weekend, the nation of Colombia, that they would turn away a repatriation flight. They decided it would be a great idea, in all stupidity, to turn away a U.S. military aircraft that was deporting illegal aliens back to Colombia. Well, little did they know how much this was going to backfire. Boy, did it backfire, and it was happening so fast. President Trump said, okay, we want to play this game, little Colombia. Don't forget, we're the world power. We're the superpower of the world. All right, so it's one thing if China wants to go up against us or Russia, but we're America, okay? And Colombia wants to go to bat against America. Okay, got it. So President Trump said, okay, we want to play this game where you deny our flights into Colombia. Okay, we can play this game. President Trump said, we're going to start out with 25% tariffs on all Colombian goods. We're going to immediately pause or revoke every single Colombian visa that is currently held by a government official. Thirdly, we're going to pause all visa applications at the Colombia, at the U.S. Embassy in Colombia, which was just a Monday appointment, had 1,500 visa appointments. And then lastly, he said, and we're going to do enhanced screenings of every single Colombian import into America, meaning we're going to make their life really, really difficult. We're going to search these containers for like, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 hours. So, and then what happened within the hour? I mean, literally within the hour. Colombian president, I'm so sorry. You know what? I'll fly my plane up there and pick them up. No problem, Mr. President. You can bring the illegal immigrants here. We got this. I'm so sorry. The Colombian president even retweeted the press statement owning Colombia that the White House press secretary put out. So, President Trump showed these Central and South American countries, look, we're the world superpower, and if we want to repatriate your citizens, we're going to do it, and you're not going to stop us.
Hello, everyone. Tim Wildman here with American Family Association and American Family Radio. Hey, our tours for 2025, our spiritual heritage tours of Washington, D.C. and Williamsburg and Boston, they're filling up. They're halfway full now. And we've never had a response quite like this. So what I'm saying is, if you want to go with us this year to either Colonial Williamsburg, which includes Jamestown and Yorktown, or Washington, D.C. and all the sites of our nation's capital, including Mount Vernon, or if you want to go with us to Boston and see the Freedom Trail and all the sites of the greater Boston area. If you want to go on these trips with us this year, it's time to check into the information and register so that you make sure you're on one of our tours, the one you want to go on, obviously. So go to the website wildmangroup.com, WILDMONgroup.com. Hope to see you on one of these in 2025.
At the Core podcast are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to The Core. You know, this story over Columbia is, it's really a lesson in utilizing the power of America for noble purposes and for righteous purposes. Instead of pushing wokeism and all this LGBTQ garbage and Green New Deal on all these other foreign nations, on all these nations, let's just like do normal stuff, like deport criminals who are here illegally and force their own countries to take them back. I mean, this is not a complicated thing, right? These are Colombian nationals that are in our country illegally and they don't belong here. So Colombia legally is obligated to take them back. That's a fact. And President Trump leveraging the power of America and putting Colombia back in their place. Now there's reports that this is just hilarious. Colombia is sending an emergency delegation to Washington, D.C. to fix what the president, the leftist president created, which is an absolute mess. So folks, the rate of change that is happening, the pace rather, is phenomenal because President Trump has people working for him that actually believe in the America First agenda. And in this case, Secretary of State Marco Rubio worked with the White House within minutes to cease all visa applications at the U.S. Embassy in Colombia and all this other stuff they were working on. I mean, it was like fast. And that's because Secretary Rubio believes in what President Trump's doing. There's unity there. They're equally yoked. And it's a much more efficient style of governing as opposed to this constant tug of war that we saw in the first administration. Well, let's jump to our next guest, Louisiana State Representative Lori Schlegel. She's with us now, and she's sponsored and introduced and helped pass some critical legislation a couple years ago in the state of Louisiana. Representative Schlegel, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Representative, there's obviously a lot that you and other lawmakers do at the state level beyond just this topic that we're going to talk about today. But this topic is not only important for our children and for our families as far as protecting young people from the harms of pornography and other obscene material, but also it's important for our country more broadly as far as setting a standard of what's appropriate and what's not appropriate as far as what's put in front of these minors on devices and elsewhere. So tell us a little bit about this age verification legislation that you helped spearhead back in the 2022 legislative session in Louisiana. Just set this up for us and the importance of this legislation.
Sure. So HB 142, which I passed in the 2022 session, it requires websites that have a substantial portion of pornography on their website, so about a third on their website, that they have to do age verification. Because right now, a child can get online and within just a few clicks can see hardcore pornography. There's no guardrails. For some, they might ask if you're over 18, but there's nothing like there would be in the physical world where if you went into an adult store or into a strip club or tried to buy a Playboy, that you would need to show identification. And so that's what HB 142 required websites to actually verify ages, so they wouldn't have minors accessing their website.
Well, this is, some people may be thinking, like, wasn't this already a thing, et cetera, et cetera. But the reality is it wasn't really a thing, at least not legally and by any type of measurable standard, because a lot of the age, you know, being required to be 18 years or older to view pornographic material, implementing that, a lot of those standards were developed before the age of the internet, or before the age at least of the internet being broadly consumer based like it is today. So basically what I'm getting at is a lot of our obscenity and pornographic standards were kind of written in a pre-internet era, so that there was everything was outdated pretty much when it comes to standards and laws on this, but also the enforcement mechanism. This is one thing that makes what you did in Louisiana different than maybe some of the other things that have been done in the past, is your legislation actually had means of enforcement, which means that it wasn't just symbolic. It was actually enforceable through some means, whether it be civil or criminal. So talk a little bit about the enforceability of House Bill 142 that was passed in Louisiana.
Sure. So part of the enforcement, in some of the past laws, they were criminal laws, and some of them got struck down by the Supreme Court. But this was in the late 90s, early 2000s, when the internet was in its infancy, and they were trying to pass age verification, but under criminal laws. So I decided that I was going to tackle this from a civil law perspective, where there's a couple things that can enforce. One would be a private right of action. So a parent can sue the porn company or the porn website that allowed the minor to get access to the material without doing age verification. And then we also have an AG enforcement, where this is a civil regulation. And then if you don't comply with this law in Louisiana, then our AG can then go after civil penalties.
Yeah, the enforcement mechanisms, and what you just mentioned there, there's a couple of different routes you can go if you believe you've been harmed by this or by the porn industry not protecting minors and not enforcing the age verification tool. What this has done, once again, we're talking to Representative Laurie Schlegel out of Louisiana. What this has done is it's actually caused multiple porn providers or pornography providers, to use the formal term, to just completely pull out of the state, which I think speaks volumes as to their ability to prevent minors from accessing their websites. I mean, it really shows that all along there wasn't, at least if there was, they would probably keep doing business in these states. There wasn't a real good mechanism to prevent young people, underage people, from accessing these websites. Is that what you're reading into this?
Yeah, so it's interesting. And what really gave me the idea of putting the private right of action where a parent can sue is because there were people suing the porn industry because they didn't even have guardrails on a verification of video uploads onto their website. And so what had happened is there were a lot of child pornography on their websites. Mm. And people whose videos were non-consensually uploaded. And so they were getting sued. And so I said, that's the one thing the porn industry cares about is money. That's where I went with the civil penalties. And it's interesting because Pornhub is complying in our state and actually doing the age verification. But as more and more states pass these laws, they then just decided to block the states. I guess it's a strategy to maybe put pressure on states not to pass. I'm not quite sure what their strategy is. I don't think they're quite winning in their strategy because no. Within 2 years, we're now at 19 states have passed this these laws. And I think it's remarkable because it's been very bipartisan. When we passed it, we had a Democratic governor. And so it's passing so quickly. And I think it goes to show you, because unfortunately, Republicans and Democrats don't join enough together to find solutions to our problems. But on this one, they have. And it's because the problem is very big. It's very real. And it's really affecting our children.
Yeah, it is. And just to kind of go back to the basics, folks, this pornography is very damaging. Very damaging to the mind, obviously morally very damaging. And it's an epidemic. It's an epidemic. That's a fact. And the broad availability of pornography in the digital realm is just making this problem exponentially worse than it otherwise would be. And so the damage is real here. And so I want to make sure we emphasize that this isn't, you know, this isn't theory or, you know, it might do harm. Anybody that's been addicted to pornography knows, you can hear testimony after testimony and you can look at all the scientific studies. It damages the individual, emotionally, mentally, and then it even, causes, damage to, individuals sexually when they want to get married and have children. There's a lot of damage there as well. So, not to mention, pornography, so-called soft pornography is the gateway, to child pornography. So the ramifications here and the absolute devastating nature of pornography just can't be overstated. So there's a very much vested interest in the government to protect young people from these damages. Well, Representative Slagle, let me ask you one more thing. Did you ever think back in 2022 that this legislation that you spearheaded in Louisiana would make it to the Supreme Court in such a relatively quick fashion when you look at how other litigation works? I mean, the Supreme Court just heard oral arguments on this several weeks ago.
Yeah, so I didn't expect it to get there this quickly, but we did craft the law with knowing that it would get to the Supreme Court, because if there's one thing the porn industry does is it fights any sort of regulation or anything that is protective to children. They did it in the past and they were able to strike down a few federal laws. So I knew that was coming. And so we wanted to make sure our law could pass constitutional muster, make it narrowly tailored. And we think we did that. And hopefully the Supreme Court will uphold our law. And what you were saying is very important in educating people. It was also very important in educating legislators that this is not just our opinion that pornography hurts children. Research has conclusively shown it has. I'm a licensed professional counselor, and I'm also a certified sex addiction therapist. But it's not my opinion. This is all very research-based. And what we know with the internet being just so pervasive and invasive, where, you know, kids have just access to it, that we know that now they will definitely see hardcore pornography. And so we have to have some guardrails on it, just like we do in the physical world.
Absolutely. And this is a fight that AFA has been engaged in from its very inception. And you know, it used to be magazines on the store shelves. Now it's the internet. Same fight, just different approaches needed in order to successfully fend off the harmful effects of pornography. I know I keep saying one more question, but they just keep coming up in my mind. Once again, we're talking
to... No, this is a very important topic.
It is. We're talking to Representative Laurie Schlegel out of Louisiana, who spearheaded House Bill 142 back in the 2022 legislature there in Louisiana. And that's now law on the books, and it was challenged at the Supreme Court. And oral arguments were heard just in the past several weeks. How does, when you think about the pornography industry, meaning your porn hubs of the world and others, they're not the only one, but they're one of the major players. When you think about lobbying in favor of what they do, it's kind of bizarre, because you wonder, like you mentioned that, well, maybe Pornhub and others are blocking their sites at the state level in order to invoke like this grassroots backlash against these age verification laws. But the reality is, Representative, is I don't think there's going to be a grassroots uprising of people that want to go public, that they have a porn problem and that they demand their pornography be accessible. So like, who lobbies for these companies? I mean, I know they probably hide under some like free speech, you know, LLC, but who lobbies for these companies? What do these lobbyists look like?
Okay, so they do. I want to first just point out, because adults still have access to pornography. What this only does is to block minors. And so like in the state of Louisiana where they're complying, you go to their landing page, it says that age verification takes less than a minute. We made sure that it's anonymous. It only tells somebody's course age. It doesn't tell anybody's identifying information. We also put guardrails in our own law that if you were to retain any information, that you can then be sued for retaining any age verification law. So adults can access it. So it's strictly to prevent minors. And so I think most people, and when you look at this issue, there is just broad bipartisan support. And so, yes, how they sort of lobby, it's called the Free Speech Coalition. That is their trade association. And that's who goes up in front of the Supreme Court and defends these laws. But even at oral arguments, they agreed that the government has a compelling interest to protect minors online from what they're seeing. Because like I tell everyone, this is not your daddy's Playboy. This is really hardcore pornography. Most of it shows some sort of aggression towards a woman. So this isn't just some benign thing that kids are seeing. And so I think most people, they get it. And so, yes, they're just doing it all under the First Amendment. That's the sort of groups they've been able to sort of rally to their side, is that this is the First Amendment and we're trying to prevent an adult from accessing their First Amendment right, which we're not. We're just trying to protect children.
Absolutely. And I think ultimately this will be upheld at the Supreme Court. We've got a pretty favorable makeup of the court. And this is a good thing. We're making headway here. And I just appreciate you, Representative, and your work on this going back a couple years ago. These are the fights that need to be had, and we're actually taking back ground. Instead of just, you know, holding the wall, if you will, laws like this are actually taking back ground and being proactive and protecting young people from the damages of pornography. So, Representative Laurie Schlegel, thanks so much for coming on the program, and I appreciate all your work.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. That's Representative Schlegel out of Louisiana, and she authored and spearheaded House Bill 142 in Louisiana going back to 2022. And folks, this is just one of a litany of things that that the Christian movement is doing well. I mean, there's a lot we can complain about in our country, but this is going on offense. And this is proactively protecting young people from the horrors that is pornography. And so I thank this representative and others, everybody working on this issue. AFA has been trying to be a leader and a supporter in this movement. And we're going to keep doing it. We're going to keep doing it in states around the country. 19 states already have this law on the books. Lord willing, the Supreme Court will uphold the law. We'll continue to pass it in other states. Lord willing, we'll get all 50 states on board. But the harm that can be prevented by keeping our children away, far away from pornography, folks, the harm that can be prevented just can't be described enough. We'll be back in a few.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
Welcome back to The Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you with us today on the program. Well, as you can tell with our interview in the last segment, there's a lot of good things going on at the state level. And we've got to continue this trend and this momentum at the state level, because I sure am thankful to have President Donald J. Trump in the White House. This is a breath of fresh air. People are rejoicing. We're thankful. And we're going to get as much done as we can in Washington. Simultaneously, we have to continue our due diligence at the state level, all right? Because a lot of this stuff happens at the state level, you know, you always see the signs, you know, shop local. Well, we need to like politic local. We need to govern local, and we need to be engaged locally on what's going on in our community and our neighborhoods, because that matters equally or as more as what happens in Washington, D.C. So that's why we like to bring on state representatives, governors, et cetera, to highlight what's going on at the state level. And we're going to do that just now with our next guest, Mississippi Public Service Commissioner for the Northern District, Chris Brown, which the Northern District of Mississippi is where we're headquartered here. And Chris Brown's with us now. He's a public service commissioner for this Northern District. Chris, welcome to the program.
Great. Thanks, Walker. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Good to be here.
Absolutely. We wanted to have you on to talk about some of the regulations and the red tape that your office has been battling, because this the ramifications of the Biden administration that thankfully were passed now were very broad, and the tentacles of the federal government into the states was very, very aggressive, and your office experienced that. Now, thankfully, we're in a new era where President Trump is in charge, so things will change in due time. But Chris, tell us just, number one, kind of the background and the work that your office does, and then let's jump into a lot of the stuff that Biden was doing that your office was having to litigate over.
Sure. Obviously, we are the Public Service Commission, so we're tasked with being the firewall, if you will, between a monopoly that is power, sewer, water, and the ratepayer. So that's our job, is to add free market principles to a monopolistic system. And that's what the Public Service Commission does. And I'm fortunate enough or blessed to represent the top 33 counties in the state, again, which you are in. So good to be here. It is a new day. I think you mentioned what a great new day it is for a new president. I was able to be at the inauguration and witness the swearing in of President Donald Trump again. And it is going to make a huge difference, because it's been a struggle for us on the state level as we try to protect the ratepayers from increasing energy costs. So the Green New Deal, the Green New Scam that a lot of people call it, seeks to charge us the ratepayers more to generate power in a less efficient way. So our office is an all the above approach when it comes to energy, as long as it makes sense and the power is reliable and the costs are low. Every dollar that you save in energy, water, and utilities is a dollar you have to spend somewhere else on your family and your quality of life. So the higher electricity bills go, the higher utilities go, the lower your quality of life becomes. We can look at Germany. Germany, I think at the beginning of last year, they went down this Green New Deal path years and years ago. But they bragged at the first quarter of last year that they had 50% of their energy as renewables. But they didn't tell you they have the second highest energy cost in the world.
Wow.
So the quality of life for Germans went down because they went down that path. And quite honestly, that's what made me run. As a father of five and a grandfather of four, I want to secure a better future for America and for our posterity. So I knew it was important for us to kind of get ahead of this Green New Deal and add some common sense to our energy production decisions.
Well, one of the things that you're litigating over is federal involvement in regulating transmission lines, which seems kind of, you know, what's the federal government doing messing with transmission lines at the state level? Well, there's probably a lot that they're doing. But give us a little background on this lawsuit.
Well, the FERC, which is one of the regulatory alphabet agencies in D.C. that oversees or pushes the president's agenda, they passed a rule called 1920. Rule 1920 sought to take away the state's rights, the state's ability to approve or not approve transmission lines going across the state. The reason that's important is transmission cost hundreds of millions of dollars to add this new infrastructure in the states. And so the FERC wanted to take it away from the Mississippi and other states. They would make the decision. So in turn, that would take the control out of our hands to regulate that cost down. So FERC wanted to push the Green New Deal because most of those renewable energy sources are a ways away, and they need transmission lines built to be able to transport that energy to where it needs to go. And that would add millions and millions to the rate base, therefore driving our average rate payers' cost up in Mississippi. So
right, because
we took that very...
Yeah, because that to further your point and kind of to dig a little deeper, what you're talking about is the federal, when you're saying FERC, Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, which, as you said, is just one of many agencies in D.C., but President Biden basically put them on a mission to start meddling around in how these states build and expand and rebuild their grids. And all the added cost that were going to be added on to this due to the regulatory and red tape nature of it, what you're saying is those costs were going to get passed on to the consumer. You can't come in and add all these rules and regulations on behalf of the federal government onto the states and these power co-ops, but then expect that those added costs just to be eaten. So this was going to be passed on to the consumers. Am I right on that?
That's correct. You hit the nail on the head, so to speak. So when we realized they were doing that, we got with Commissioner Christie, which was one of the common sense commissioners on the FERC. And we got together with our legal counsel and drafted a lawsuit pushing back against Rule 1920. So a lot of other states used our language and joined in that common lawsuit to push back against that federal overreach that would destabilize the grid and increase the cost of energy to our consumers. So we're here to, again, my main goal is to make sure we have reliable, affordable energy. And the federal government was trying to make that almost impossible for us to maintain had Rule 1920 been adopted.
Let me ask you this, Chris, before we move on to maybe some of the other things you're working on. What's your opinion on like whether the feds need to be involved at all in our energy production and transmission? I mean, you know, I understand there may be national security reasons to have some type of understanding and grasp on how our grid is structured and obviously have some standards, right, that are passed by Congress, by our duly elected representatives, you know, to ensure grid reliability from national security threats. But other than that, what's your opinion on, like, the constitutionality of these agencies, these bureaucrats meddling around in our transmission lines and our energy production?
Well, you know, you just start looking at the efficiency of the energy production that we energy production capacity that we have. Nuclear is 95% efficient. That means it's 95% on all the time. The second most efficient is natural gas. So natural gas is in the 80% energy efficient or efficient. Coal is third at 60s in the 60 percentile. Wind is down at 36-37%, and solar's down to 25%. So when you start looking at that energy generation, how are you going to make up those deltas? How are you going to make up the difference to make sure that the power is always on, you don't have rolling brownouts and blackouts, and you keep those costs low? So the states know better how to maintain that grid reliability and the rates of the people that we are answerable to, and these government agencies don't answer to anybody. And so I think that's what the president is endeavoring to do with DOGE and others, is to try to rein in this overreach of these federal government bureaucrats that are trying to govern policy on the states that leads us down the path of Germany.
Yeah.
Of course, Germany lost huge industrial capacity because their energy costs are too high. And we don't want to follow their lead. We need to be energy independent. We need to keep rates low and reliable and make sure the future of America and Mississippi is bright.
Yeah, that's right.
And literally bright.
Yeah. No pun intended, right? We need to lean into nuclear. And I know you mentioned that. But nuclear, to me, is the way of the future. You talked about the 95% efficiency. It's actually very clean despite the hoaxes out there and the misinformation about, you know, the fears with nuclear. It's actually very, very clean, actually very safe when you look at the studies. Another reason to combat federal overreach into our energy production and transmission, which your office is doing now currently in federal court, and hopefully the Trump administration will work with you guys to rescind that rule. But one of many reasons that I want to point out that we have to combat this federal overreach into our energy grid is because of the quotas that the environmentalists and the Green New Deal fanatics want to impose on us. And what I'm talking about is, we know that they want to control, these Green New Deal people want to control how much energy you and I use a day. That's a fact. And this is not conspiracy theory. You watch the lectures and you read the papers that these radical left-wing environmentalists write about. They want to be able to tell you and me how much energy we get to use a day. And what that gets down to is how many miles we drive a day, how many showers we take a day, how many loads of laundry we do. This is why they're regulating all the appliances. Eventually, under a Green New Deal, dream world, they want to control exactly what everyone does through carbon credits. That's the danger, in my opinion, of going all electric on our appliances, on our vehicles, is you start tethering them to the internet, and then there's a master, body that regulates it, and they can throttle down your usage literally. So that's another threat. That's kind of a secondary layered threat beyond just the constitutional grounds. But there's no doubt, Chris, that these Green New Deal fanatics want to tell you and me how much energy we can use a day.
Yeah, Walker, you're right. And so I'm an all of the above approach. If it makes sense, let's do it. But it's got to be through the lens of reliability and cost. And so if we don't have reliability, and what you're talking about is true, they know that if we sell out to the total renewable and we totally jettison nuclear and natural gas and other forms of generation, you will have rationing of power. You will not have enough to keep everything going.
Yes.
We see it in California with the rolling brownouts. We see it in other countries that don't have the ability to produce. So we need to lead the world in energy production, not lag behind, because that's how we secure our future and the future of our kids. And it's a national security issue. Mm-hmm. If we can't provide power to ourselves, then and we rely on manufactured goods from other countries to get our energy, that's a recipe for disaster.
Absolutely.
And you mentioned nuclear. A lot of people are and along that that environmentalists used to hate nuclear. Now they kind of are embracing it, and so that it's less fear around it. But you can look to our navies, our naval ships. We have, our aircraft carriers have two nuclear reactors on board the aircraft carriers, and our submarines have a nuclear reactor on them. They operate safely, efficiently, and it's a totally different world in nuclear today than it was back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think nuclear is the way of the future. Even to your point, some of these left-wing groups are beginning to realize that. And some of these major, tech conglomerates like Microsoft and others, they're building like mini reactors on their AI campuses. So this is a
thing. SMRs are coming.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So I think a common sense is taking over on that front. Once again, we've been talking to Mississippi Public Service Commissioner for the Northern District, Chris Brown. Hey, Chris, thanks for bringing us up to speed on some of this litigation. And Lord willing, you'll reach some kind of consensus with the incoming Trump administration.
Hey, we're excited about it. I know that I will mention this before we go, that Christy, the conservative on the FERC, was just appointed to chairman of the FERC. So I do see things turning very quickly, and we'll work hand in glove with this new administration to make sure our energy future is secure, right, reliable, and affordable.
Absolutely. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate you coming on.
Thanks, Walker. Be back anytime. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it. That's Chris Brown. He's the commissioner for the Northern District of Mississippi, public service commissioner, that is. And doing some very important work, a lot of work that a lot of people don't think about or overlook, but fighting back against the bureaucracy and the red tape and the overreach. Give me a break. Federal government meddling around in state transmission lines. The private sector does it best. That's a fact. In 99% of use cases, the private sector does it best. And utility and power is no different. And I know there's co-ops and otherwise, but there's got to be some government involvement in utility regulation and production. But we definitely don't need the feds involved. We definitely don't need the feds involved, because what's my saying? Everything Washington touches, they break. So less Washington, more state control. I'm all for it. Meet Kelsey. When she found out she was pregnant, she wasn't sure where to turn. But after meeting with the counselors at a preborn network clinic who loved and supported her, and after hearing her baby's heartbeat on a free ultrasound, she chose life.
When a mother looks at her child through a sonogram, it does something to you. You know, I ended up deciding to keep my son, who is now 5 years old today. He's amazing. He brings absolute joy to my heart. I could not imagine life without him. Not only did they help me save his life, they saved my life.
By introducing a woman to her baby on ultrasound, a baby's chance of life doubles. If you have the means, would you consider a leadership gift to save babies in a big way? Your tax-deductible donation of $5,000 will sponsor Preborn's entire network for 24 hours, helping to rescue 200 babies. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 on your phone and then say the keyword baby. Or you can donate securely at preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.